Welcome to Tales from the Fourth Trimester, a podcast dedicated to the beauty and brutality of new motherhood. I'm your host, Naomi Chrysalakis, and I'm a postpartum doula and cook in Sydney, Australia. My service, Cocoon, provides good food and a helping hand for new mamas. Join me as I chat to women about what happened after they brought their baby home and interview experts for their wisdom. Because giving birth is just the beginning. Hello and welcome to Tales from the Fourth Trimester. I have got a special guest on today, Nadine Richardson, who is the founder of She Births. You've probably heard of it. It's a birth education course that's been scientifically verified. It's got an amazing reputation, and I've just recently done it myself in preparation for my second birth, which is imminent. If you don't hear from me in the next week or so, you will know why, because baby is on his way, I really hope. Anyway, it was really lovely chatting to Nadine, and also quite strange because I feel like I know her through doing the online She Births course, where she was in my living room most nights with me and Michael. And I've also been doing a lot of her birth preparation meditations, which you can get all of them through the course. And there's a couple of great ones on Insight Timer, which is a free meditation app if you haven't come across it. So I wanted to get Nadine on because obviously she's got a very strong focus on birth with She Births. She's also a doula and a yoga teacher. But I wanted to hear about her thoughts around postpartum, her own postpartum, and what she thinks about the principles of the She Births program and how that can actually be taken into the fourth trimester. So I think Nadine's insights are really interesting particularly in the context of looking at birth and postpartum as a continuum rather than, you know, going, okay, well, I've prepared for the birth, everything else will fall into place. Or, you know, the opposite, which is, okay, I've got everything set up for postpartum, but birth is, you know, a whole different ballgame. Nadine's really great at breaking down how it's all interconnected, parenting, you know, the fourth trimester, early parenting, parenting as an ongoing thing. And I found it really fascinating to chat to her. I should also tell you that if you are interested in doing the She Births course yourself, if you're pregnant, I highly recommend it. And I'm not just saying that because I did it and I'm biased, although I am. If you are keen, I've got a 10% discount code, which is Cocoon, COCOON10. So if you're keen to sign up for that online course, which has been a godsend to so many people during life under COVID, I know, then yes, there's a code for you. All right, I will let you guys enjoy the conversation with Nadine. Today I've got Nadine Richardson joining me. She is the founder of She Births. Hi Nadine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Naomi. It's great to be here. I love what you're doing. It's awesome.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have to say, one of the things that impressed me most about She Births, which I've almost finished, I haven't quite got to module 4, but I'm doing the online course and I've finished all of the birthing stuff, but I was so impressed to see what a big focus there was on what comes after, because certainly in the birth education I did for my first birth, I don't think there was really anything more than a cursory, you know, mention. And it looks like there's actually a lot that you've got in there, not just about the immediate postpartum, but going into parenting, which I just think is so important. And
yeah,
so
it's almost a quarter. Yeah, that's right. It is almost a quarter of the course now. But yeah, it is. It's like so important. And it's not important, and this is what we were talking about, you know, for this podcast. It's not important in the way that people think it's important. Like, I don't think you actually need to do a course in how to, like, bathe and wrap your baby because you see it once and you know how to do it. Or you do it once and you sort it. It's like nappy, wrap, bathe, done, good. Mm. Okay, got that. That's like 10 minutes down, right? Mm. So let's not waste our time in birth education, our precious, precious time. And let's not always teach to that lowest common denominator. Let's go a little bit higher and let's give people some real resources, principles, philosophy. So even though a quarter of the course is really devoted to breastfeeding and conscious parenting, so much of the course for pregnancy and birth is applicable throughout, you know, the postpartum period. And I think that's where so many people come out of she births and they're like, for years, for 10 years, 12 years, they're like, yep, she births family. Yep. Still doing my visualizations. Yep. Without it changed our life. It changed the way we parent. And I loved hearing that. That was really beautiful for me.
Because it's not just, you know, birth is really important, but it's, you know, it's not just the be all and end all. It's what sort of starts you on that parenting journey. Well, I guess it starts before birth, but it's kind of that, yeah, that moment. And then it's what happens after that.
It's the climactic moment in a long arc, a long story, you know, that began when you were conceived and your mother was conceived, because the eggs that you hold were within those two generations. Because we know that, you know, if your grandma had, you know, oranges that were sprayed with DDT, you know, in the World War II era, you know, that still impacts the quality of the ovum that began you and your genetics, right? And we know epigenetically trauma gets passed down. So, you know, somewhere in this continuum, you developed a longing to become a mother and that yearning. And that's actually when the body starts to regulate itself towards ovulation and consciously connect with the moments that come thereafter. And changes, you know, choice of partners and changes diet and all these extraordinary things. And, you know, that kind of leads into that whole principle of she births, you know, about trusting nature and seeing yourself as an innate part of that. So yeah, there's an extraordinary continuum, and birth is like this, just a climactic moment in the whole perinatal period or in the whole motherhood progression. Mm. Yeah. Journey. Yeah.
For people who haven't heard about she births, which I feel like is probably isn't that many, because I feel like so many people told me about she births before I did the course myself. But for people who haven't heard about it, do you mind giving everyone a little bit of a rundown what it's all about?
Yeah, like on a sort of practical level, she births is classically like a 2-day course face to face when we're not in a pandemic or an online program, and it takes you through the preparation to create a beautiful birth, you and your partner, the skills, and if it's not your partner, it's your birth support person, through the inner and outer resources, as well as the knowledge that's required. So those three pillars come together and work in a harmonious, spiraling kind of climactic way towards the birth. You know, they build upon each other. If we work along all three pillars, we get this extraordinary foundation and strength and ability to create a beautiful birth no matter what unfolds. And the majority of those births are natural. And, you know, we just happen to be, not we just happen, I'm being a bit weirdly awkward with it. Yeah, we happen to be the only course in the world that's scientifically verified as well. There's been lots and lots of trials done of antenatal education, and the majority of them, you know, prove that birth education just like might help a woman dilate a little faster, but nothing has ever been shown like the reductions in cesareans that we've had and epidurals and so on. So yeah, if people want to read those, like, look at the British Medical Journal from July 2019. Yeah.
You've got some very impressive statistics around
the
reduction in cesareans and epidurals. I can't remember what the figures are, but
It's 44% reduction in epidurals compared, like when people did the standard hospital course compared to she births as an intervention, the 2-day program. Yeah, 44% reduction in caesars was found and a 65% reduction in epidurals. Yeah. And then there's some other really amazing impacts on the baby and perineums, and second stage is shorter. And yeah, when you really give people the knowledge and the tools, they can roll with it. They can have great experiences. Mm. You can't get like, you know, 100% natural births. Like that's never going to happen. But we can get as close as we can. And that's where it really comes down to, you know, our philosophy is always about, has been from the beginning, we're here to help people have beautiful births no matter what unfolds. Because as a doula, I just saw too many women coming out of birth feeling like they'd failed or feeling ashamed or traumatized, you know. So those three areas really need individual kind of addressing. And it took me a long, long time and lots of hours of thinking and planning and working with people to try and find the way to go through that education process with people. Yeah.
So as you mentioned, you're a doula as well. You're also a yoga teacher. Well, you wear lots of hats. Which came first? How did that all come about?
Yeah, yoga. Yoga's always comes first. But I mean, I do less and less of the yoga teaching and less of the doula-ing, and yeah, it all changes over certain. And I've been a celebrant too, and I started out being accepted into medicine and choosing not to go down that path. And I suppose I always had the urge to help people. And I suppose I also always wanted to find the root cause of why people had dis-ease or unhappiness. And I wanted to truly heal. So I was always looking for answers, you know, as deep as I possibly could. And I think I knew that medicine wasn't going to give me that. And because it hadn't worked ultimately in my life, it was a great symptomatic treatment. And it's friggin' fantastic if there's, you know, a preventing death. But in terms of healing and solving and preventing, it falls short greatly. So yeah, I suppose that's where I turned into alternative ways and started the exploration. And on that journey for my own individual self, I discovered yoga and a whole lot of other therapies that worked so incredibly well. And I started doing yoga at 16 and, you know, treated my own anxiety disorder and depression over a number of years. And then I went into documentary film because I'm very passionate about changing the world, and definitely, and I studied Indigenous people and healing through the arts, and then ultimately left it all to become full-time yoga teacher. And yeah, before it was trendy. And when we had to do olden day apprenticeships in Bondi, Bondi training schools didn't exist in the olden days. So yeah, I think I've been a yoga teacher now like 24 years. And yeah, you can still do yoga when you're a bit frumpy and a bit stiff, which is great. And you've got injuries. That's cool. You can just keep on doing it because it really doesn't matter. It's not about pretzel shapes. And it just evolved from there, like fascination with birth after my own experience with Leroy, and then a miscarriage experience nearly 3 years after his, was such a contrast to Leroy's labor. And I was doula-ing, and massive kind of realizations were happening. A massive awakening was kind of taking place. And I just rolled with it as best I could. And she births kind of just came. That was it. Then it was just like, oh my God, I just had to mention it in a cafe in Gould Street in Bondi. And then all of a sudden, like, doors open and people, it was just like, we were just flooded. I just sort of see myself as the caretaker of it. And it's just been busy ever since, 12 years on. Yeah.
And now it's an absolute force to be reckoned with.
She is. It's the she, you know, it's not me really. It's the she.
So how old is your son now? How old is it? How many years has it been?
Leroy, the man, le roi, the king, he is 18. Okay. Yeah, he just finished school. He was quite young to finish school. He's an April baby like me, so he finished 17. And so he turned 18 and he just went to the pub last week. because the pubs have just reopened for anyone who's listening to this. And he went to the pub and got drunk. Yes.
Good for him.
As they do. As they do.
Tell us a little bit about what your postpartum was like. I've heard bits and pieces about your birth story. And I remember you saying he was posterior, at least at some point. Mm. Like, oh, yeah, I had a posterior baby as well, first time.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Oh.
Yeah, but I haven't heard. I haven't heard how.
Pain in the ass.
Like, literally.
Yeah, postpartum. And I've never really been asked that question, and I love talking about it. I think it's a really, really important question, and that's why I think it's great that you're bringing that to the forefront for people to think about their postpartum, not just about their birth, to spend time consciously planning, designing, dreaming that up. Because I think we were very lucky to have, I think two things served up my postpartum. One was our independent midwife that we hired at like 36 weeks, you know, fumbling around in the dark, you know, before internet, really, like not knowing where I was going to get the best kind of birth outcome or best birth support. And my father, who spent quite a bit of time in working in obstetrics, but left it because it was so brutal and torturous what they were doing to women in Scotland at that time, he said to me, okay, you know, if birth is just women's business, I'll pay for your midwife, you know. We had no money, like being a yoga teacher, right? So yeah, that was a gift, because she held our hand and she nurtured us. She was like this container of space and love and sanctity. She brought a sanctity to the experience. And so I wasn't really bothered birthing at home or not, but I frigging loved getting into bed after Leroy was born in my own bed and lying there with him, knowing that my midwife was coming to my house the next morning, you know, which was like 4 hours later, to check and see how we were going and how my boobs were. And she was going to come every single day and slowly wean herself, you know, wean us off her over a 6-week period. Like, I had no idea what a gift that was. That was just like extraordinary. And she said to us when we were just bemused and just captivated by Leroy, we actually didn't sleep that first night. We got into bed and we just put Leroy in between us and we just stared at him. Like, we were just like, and I don't think there was really much thought. There was just complete open, spacious mind and wonder and awe and love and humility. And, you know, that those moments. And she came in, I think, I don't know what day it was, and she just said, this is a very sacred time. And that, you know, when someone speaks something and it's like, it was like a big stone in the pond of my consciousness. And it's like, it's just continued to ripple out. And I don't know how many times I've said that to my families that I've supported, but it's like rippled out through every woman family that I've ever connected with and spoken to, because the sacredness of that time is beyond words. It really is. So she was our gift to connect, consciously connect us with the sacredness and the restfulness and the simplicity of that time and the prioritizing that's really important in that time of like, all it's about is sleeping, eating, and going to the toilet and showering when you can. Like, that's all it's about, you know. We didn't have bone broths in those days or green smoothies. No one ate their placentas. You know, we just snuggled up in bed. We didn't have belly belts. There was nothing. We just snuggled in bed and we just watched my boobs get ginormous and then we watched them settle. And, you know, and she even said to me, like, when I would feed at night, she said, and she only had one child Hillary, and she would say to me, oh, that's the most precious times, those really quiet, dark moments together, you know, with nobody else around in the stillness of the night. And so, you know, I didn't get up and put the television on. I would sit there and be conscious through these sacred moments of watching my body give life to another continuum going on. And I think when you combine that with a completely annihilating, ego-annihilating birth experience, where you're just like, honestly, I just felt like I'd been fucking thrown down onto my knees, flattened on the earth. I was ready to just keel over. I mean, I was yelling out, like, just cut it out. Just cut it out. Just like, I'm done. I can't do this, you know. So 5 days of pre-labor and whatever, you know, putting numbers on it means nothing. 36 hours of labor, whatever, 2 centimeters dilated. It was just like, I'm done. And then, but it was fine because she was a stand for me. And she's like, Nadine, you have worked too hard. You are going into hospital having an epidural and you will push this baby out. I'm like, okay, you know, and I did. She wasn't going to let it happen. She was like, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And so that was that, you know, but I think that humility, and that was what I needed. It was mm-hmm. like a total disintegration of Nadine, and it, you know, I was birthed as was he, and I didn't know who I was. I was in a very sacred bubble. The bubble was then burst at 3 weeks when my partner said to me, I had no concept of time. He said, you know what? I can't keep like working and caring for you anymore. You're going to have to get your shit together and get back to work. And so I did.
Oh.
Yeah, nice. We're not together anymore. Can you tell? So, you know, I'm just going to be totally honest here because, you know, why bother not being honest, I suppose. And that was literally like someone just took the pin and just burst it. And yeah, I was still finding it hard to walk. My pelvis was completely misaligned, but, you know, we needed money. And so I started teaching private yoga sessions. And
oh, God.
Yeah, I just used to take Libra with me. I had the most wonderful clients, you know, it had their own kids and they understood. And, yeah, I'd be in triangle pose, breastfeeding, leaning over and, you know, trying to, often the places I went, they might have a nanny there anyway. And so mm-hmm. they'd sometimes hold Leroy or, and then we slowly, I think we got a babysitter by week 4 and, you know, I'd only be out of the house for a couple of hours, literally rush around the corner in Bronte. Well, we lived across the road from one of the main families that I taught for 20 years. So, and around the corner from another family that I still teach for over 20 years. So it's like, yeah, you know, it wasn't terrible, but the bubble was burst and it would have been nicer to do a transition. So anyway, that was my postpartum. I hope I didn't ramble on. But
not at all. No. I mean, it just, gosh, that sounds like complete opposite ends of the spectrum. You got this incredibly nourishing, sacred experience for 3 weeks where you were guided. I mean, it's so beautiful that you were guided by someone who really could frame it for you in that way, as opposed to maybe, I don't know, like I hear all about women having their own expectations about having to get back to things, or they see things on social media and everyone's got their shit together except them. But then it feels like we're forced to go in the opposite direction.
And I hadn't even thought about work. Like, I mean, I was just 27. I just turned 27, like, you know, 5 days before my waters broke. So it was just like, I just kept working and until one of my yoga students said, like, are you a bit exhausted? Like, I think I would look like a zombie trying to walk up the stairs to their house. And they're like, I said, oh yeah, I'm just boiling. And so they sent over like an air conditioning unit and they said, why don't you just take a couple of weeks off before you give birth? I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I just hadn't even thought about it. Didn't have any friends who'd given birth. People were just starting to talk about birth plans, I think. No one had certainly talked about a postpartum plan. And because you work for yourself, it's all a bit weird and blurry. Yeah, so the world is such a different place, you know, in 18 years. Like, It's extraordinary how much and people can know and discover and prepare for now. And yeah, look, I always say, you know, 40 days rest for 40 years health. And I can tell you now, like, I'm 18 years on and my health is starting to fall apart big time. And all I did was 3 weeks. So do the other three, people, and get a huge run thereafter. I'm also, like, you know, a hardcore go-go person. I'm aware of that as well. But yeah, if you want 40 years of health, do your 40 days rest. Scare yourself into it that way.
And they do say, for people who are listening and going, oh shit, I fucked that up already with my first birth, they say that you can make up for it in subsequent births. That you can.
I know.
So that's what I'm kind of hoping for second time around.
I've heard that and I've seen that. You know, birth is a healing opportunity. And I think the postpartum is a deep. And I've met women that haven't done it at all for their first two and then have done it for their third. And wow, like the depth and the presence and the nobility that that woman comes out with, that sense of connection inside herself to who she is and her value, her self-worth, like that is configured in that time. And it's configured in a different way with the accumulation of experiences previously, of course. So I absolutely, you can catch up. You can do it. Yeah, I ain't going to be pushing a baby out soon, so I won't be able to do it. But you can, darling. You go for it.
I'm not suggesting that you need to go that far, but, you know,
no.
You're going to it. one thing I really loved hearing when I was doing the course, I think it's in module one, you talk about the principles of she births and how those principles actually translate kind of perfectly to parenthood. Do you want to talk a little bit about that beautiful, there's beautiful diagram?
Yeah, the little wheel, the spinning wheel, the flower of evolution. Yeah. Well, you know, in the center of that diorama or whatever it's called, is the word evolution, because that's all we're ultimately here for, is to grow, to learn and evolve, and to evolve into a more sophisticated, more elegant, more loving self and more relevant to the planet, more able to serve, more able to give. And that's only going to come from a place of deep love. And that's what birth is really all about, and parenthood. So evolution is in the middle, and then around it are all the hormones, the primary hormones. I mean, there's like over 100 or something in a woman's body. It's like we're crazy concoctions and mysterious. No wonder we're freaking mysterious. There's like all these millions of things going on and up and down and peaking and then troughing and then like all throughout our monthly cycle and then all throughout pregnancy. So we've got all the hormones, and then interspersed with those are these principles and faith, relaxation and pleasure. And you could really align that with the Vedic kind of philosophy or the yogic philosophy, which is a completely earthbound spirituality. It's a nature-based spirituality. It's not paganism, but it looks to the principles or the commonalities, the patterns in nature, and tells us the laws and the sequences of how things occur and what the truth of life is. And so in a Vedic world, yeah, faith, relaxation and pleasure is how we move into this evolutionary process. So faith is about trusting birth and trusting your body, and you're going to lose it at some point. You're not going to hold it. No one can. We're going to lose, forget, remember, come back, dig deeper, get pushed to the point where, you know, we can't possibly ever imagine trusting life or ourselves or our bodies again, and we'll have to choose it, you know, consciously. And then relaxation is simply about, you know, letting go. And of course we need that in birth. We need to learn this art of surrender and softening and yielding and opening. And then pleasure allows us to bring play and fun and joy and sensuality and sexuality, laughter, all these elements come in to facilitate these wonderful hormones. So if we can practice relaxation and pleasure and adopt this attitude of faith, then we can traverse birth with a greater ease. And it's the same through the whole of life, because, you know, one of the best things my, you know, spiritual teachers ever said to me is just relax and enjoy. Just relax and enjoy. And you can only really relax and enjoy if you kind of trust there's a master plan and you're actually still a part of that master plan. You're not separate to it. The universe isn't telling you something. You are the friggin' universe and you are connecting and hearing what it is. So we see ourselves as part of nature, and to be part of nature means that we are supremely intelligent. A flower knows how to grow, it knows how to open, the water runs from highest to lowest, you know, we're the exact same. Just jump in the river and flow with life, and she'll look after you. So yeah, that's the overarching kind of principles. And yeah, they're just beautiful to adopt through the living of life. And, you know, parenting might be where we hit most of our challenges. We might have a crazy pregnancy, fantastic birth, and then a baby that doesn't sleep, or, you know, a baby with severe reflux that's in pain a lot of the time. And who knows? So nobody gets off scot-free, you know, from conception to 2 years postpartum, that perinatal continuum, there's no one I've ever met that gets off scot-free.
Yeah, like I have a theory that you can't, if you have a shitty fertility journey, you know, maybe you're going to have a nice crazy pregnancy and an easy postpartum, or if you've had an easy conception, easy pregnancy, it's going to hit you. But like it's going to hit somewhere.
You could be graceful with it, because, and the thing is, like, if someone's told you that no one gets off scot-free, because it's a rite of passage, like, you can't go to the other side, you can't birth yourself anew without some challenge, without some friction, without some loss of faith, that you have to return to faith. We forget love, we return, we choose to come back. So that is the rite of passage of this very powerful time.
But it's so, I think it's so hard to surrender to that for most people. And I feel like we live in this culture of control and, you know, hard work equals results. And I mean, I'm totally talking from my own personal experience.
Totally.
And you struggle against it and I've got a shit sleeper, but there must be a way to fix it. I can't just surrender to co-sleeping. No.
And all the people that are making millions of dollars off girls thinking that they can't do it and they have to fix it. Buy my book and do this and all that stuff. Yep.
What would you say to someone who is sort of in that mindset of, but I should be doing this, or my baby should be doing that, or, but so-and-so's baby sleeps through at 7 weeks or whatever, you know, all it's usually around sleep or feeding or, you know, those big ones. What would you say to someone who's kind of in that really hard place where they just want things to be smooth and it's not smooth?
Well, problem solving isn't wrong, right? We want to problem solve when we hit challenges, for sure. But fixing is not really, I suppose that's like not the word to be adopting. Fixing, and you're totally right, controlling, fixing, comparing are not going to serve you when you hit the challenge. When you hit the challenge, you have to adopt trust and faith. You have to look for the pleasure and the joy. You have to practice gratitude. You got to relax, right? So you got to bring those principles in. And then we look to the three pillars: knowledge, inner resources, outer resources. What knowledge could I gain right now? Where can I go right now to gain some understanding and context around what's taking place? And absolutely, education and knowledge can be sometimes just the most liberating thing, you know, a simple conversation with someone that has a broader sense of experience or context or consciousness can shift how you are seeing the sleep issue. And then all of a sudden there is no issue. You know, it could be as simple as that, right? It could be a 20-minute chat. You go, oh my God, like that's okay. That's like normal. Or yeah, maybe I'll just like relax about that. And all of a sudden your child just sleeps through and they don't have those issues. That can happen too. But then you want to look to as well, what are the other, and this is why we set up our little wisdom circles, our soul mama circles. Like what have other people been doing? What have they been utilizing externally and internally? So, you know, bringing mindfulness and presence and just stillness to a crying baby might be a way to approach, you know, a child rather than tactics of patting and rocking and distracting. So those are more those inner resources and they require a sense of mindfulness and presence and cultivation. But of course there are pragmatic and practical things that we can do, but we should be a little bit more wary of those because you're totally right. Those are the go-tos. That's what people do. And we just throw money at stuff and we just, you know, expect other people to come in sometimes and solve our problems when they're not really problems. They're just normal, natural expressions of a being of that size. You know? So yeah, I do like to problem solve, but as long as we're looking from the inner and the outer with some self-reflection, contemplation and considering perspective in all of it as knowledge as well.
It feels often like it can be a bit of a conflict between the sort of masculine way of doing things and the feminine way, which is, I mean, something I'm sure you've got way more of a handle on with all of your yoga than I do, but I just keep seeing that feminine quality of sitting with it and listening and holding space and
yeah.
You know, getting the support. And I hear you when I, you know, you are having a rough time. And it's one thing I say to a lot of my mamas is, okay, sometimes it's not about fixing the baby. I mean, sometimes there are things that you can do to help the baby, but often it's like, okay, you can't control what the baby is doing, but how can you control how you're reacting, how can you make yourself feel supported and nourished? And maybe that's, you know, having meals brought to you by friends for a week so you can have a break from that, or having older children looked after, or whatever the case might be. But it does seem like, generally speaking, we get very stuck in these kind of masculine ways of looking at baby room, combined with exactly what you're saying of not really having a great understanding of normal newborn behavior.
For sure. And, you know, the majority of problems with parenthood really come from the fact that we're not living in a village.
Yeah.
So most of the problems you have in your relationship are coming from the fact that you're so friggin' intensely close with that other person and expecting too much from them. And that's all as a result of not living in a village with a bunch of women that you sit around with all day laughing and basket weaving and playing with kids and dogs and hunt, you know, picking berries and cooking a bit and then having another bit of a giggle about how stupid the men look, you know, as they go off hunting. You know, that kind of camaraderie, that kind of oxytocin space that we are designed to hang out in, we're not designed to hang out in fight or flight, you know, that is lacking, as is parental sharing, as is normalizing birth, as is, so, you know, the only reason you're really doing birth education courses and that I recommend it, you know, even though I'm saying there's all these experts out there, blah, blah, don't look to the experts, look to yourself, you know, you're doing education to normalize birth. And it's the same with having you on board. It's to normalize and to give education that you would have absorbed through your childhood, your teenage years, and then, you know, in your 20s before you had your first baby. And you would have a whole bunch of other women around helping you, and you discover a whole bunch of skills and strategies and normals, experiences for different babies. So, you know, so much is just coming. So whenever people have a problem, I think that's the number one thing to realize. It's not unique to you. It's just part of our culture, and it's part of our, you know, post-industrial society kind of patriarchy. And like you say, there's a lot of masculine approach that we've had at work. And that's why you've got to do a bit of birth ed as well and get in that zone of coming out of that masculine kind of way of being and start to find the value in being feminine, in being that yin space for yourself and going inward. So yeah, you're spot on as well.
If you could tell people, well, you do tell people, but what's the one thing you wish people going into first-time parenthood knew about that amazing transformation into becoming a first-time parent?
Oh my God. That's what I'm writing a book about.
Are you?
Well, that's why I was with Jessie today. She's helping me.
So
that's
amazing.
It's lovely. This is a beautiful conversation. If you guys are listening there, this is like a seed conversation to the birth of a book. What would I say? I would say that, and this is what I'm trying to write about, you know, that, you know, childbirth and parenthood, motherhood, fatherhood, this is like the greatest opportunity you have in your life to transform and to become who you really want to be and to discover what you're actually deeply longing for ultimately, which is, yeah, the hero's journey, as Joseph Campbell puts it. But for us as women giving birth and as people becoming parents, that the hero's journey, the prize, the holy grail is love, is enlightenment. This is a journey of awakening. And I think it's actually one of the biggest missed opportunities on the planet today. And if people could awaken to their power, to their love, to their trust and faith in nature and the innate intelligence, the supreme intelligence that exists inside their body and mind, then the world would be a completely different place if we really harnessed the power of this time and the transformation that's available and the love. If we really let ourselves feel and just melt in that love of holding the sweetness, sweet newborn, and the love you feel for your partner when you go through the process together, it's just so powerful. It totally rewires the brain. We know all of that now. But yeah, it's about consciousness changing. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Can you write the book? Because I have no idea how to go beyond that.
I don't know about that.
Because everything's there. Like everything's there, and the mindfulness is there in the birth period. Like, you know, feminism is there. You know, Buddhism, the Vedic wisdom is there, you know, it's all there in birth. You can connect with it. You can find it. There's resonance there. Yeah. The awakening is there.
And I think sometimes my feeling is part of the reason why it can feel so full on is because it's such a concentrated sort of experience. It's such a, you know, it's not a years long or, you know, process. It's like, boom, you're in and you're instantly feeling kind of connected. Like I know that I felt, and I've talked to other people, you know, you feel so connected to every other woman, every other mother, and suddenly this kind of expansion of your understanding. Like I remember being awake one night with my daughter and just being like, you know, there are thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of women awake right now feeding their baby. Like just, I don't know. I just yeah, found that you're just so aware of other things. And I think if you allow it to, it can completely change the course of your life, your work,
totally,
your relationship. Ah, oh, relationships, man. I feel like we could do a whole other podcast on.
Yeah, like you could do a whole podcast. Like you could do podcasts on sexuality and how that changes, the brain vagina connection, like the opening to pleasure.
Wait, you know, the brain vagina connection? What's the brain vagina
connection? Oh, yeah. There's heaps of neural connectors between the vagina and the brain. Heaps. The vagina is pretty much the seat of consciousness. Yeah. Just pick up Naomi Wolf's book, Vagina, which my son was so not impressed with when it was left out on the sofa one day and his mates came over. He was like, oh, devastated, devastated. You know, but she's right. Like, unless we're connected to that space, we can lose our creativity and our power as a woman. So, you know, women who've been lacerated in the vagina, you know, the Hutus and the Tutsis when they were fighting in Rwanda and Zaire, and people took machetes and did terrible things. Those women never recover. They never, ever, ever recover from that trauma, no matter how much therapy and support and counseling they're given. There isn't a recovery from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when the nerve function wasn't working well in Naomi Wolf's back because she fell on the floor at Macy's and smashed the vertebrae and condensed this nerve, she lost this ability for sexual pleasure. And she noticed that colors changed and that she wasn't able to write as well and her creativity was stifled and the world looked like a completely different place. And so she, it was through that that she went to the doctor and he said, like, you need an operation tomorrow. She had this operation and she slowly watched her perception change. And then the more she researched it, she realized that the brain and the vagina are very, very connected. And of course they have to be, right? You've got to have that connection. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of receptors and firing that goes on in the brain through that stretching, through that opening. Yeah, there's a lot.
Fascinating. Okay. It is. That's on my reading list.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's a very liberating book. It's a very, liberates you from the idea of what an orgasm is and like how every woman's wired differently in the lower back from into that pelvic space, like the nerves for our own pleasure systems are quite different in different women. And yet there is so much that connects the brain and the vagina, obviously the spinal cord and the nervous system to start. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Nadine, I feel like we could talk for hours, but I'm going to let you go. Before I do, is there anything you would like to, any thoughts, anything at all that you would like to leave the listeners with that you feel like we haven't covered off? Any last words?
No, I think what you're doing is wonderful and I would, you know, highly recommend that women don't just, you know, prepare for birth, they prepare for a beautiful postpartum. And they put together their birth preferences and they put together their postpartum preferences as well, you know, or plan, if you want to call it that, and cultivate and create it and remember that it really is a sacred time. 100%. Revel in the sacredness. Yeah.
Mm. You're making me excited for my own postpartum.
Good. Yeah. May it be deeply enriching and fortify you and bring you everything that you are longing for.
Thank you, Nadine. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Tales from the Fourth Trimester. I appreciate each and every one of you who listens, shares, rates and reviews and does all of those things, tells a friend, the works. If you'd like to connect with me, you can head on over to Instagram or Facebook at Cocoon by Naomi is where you can find me. You can head to my website, which is www.cocoonbynaomi.com. Thanks and see you next week.